Hey, this is Derek. You're listening to Skepticality, the official audio program for Skeptic Magazine. On Tuesday, January 3rd, 2017. Happy New Year.
Skepticality.
Welcome back to another episode of Skepticality, the show that brings you news and interviews with researchers, authors, professors, and people from all walks of life for the promotion of rational thought, critical thinking, and science! Oh boy, it's a new year. Take a look at the calendar. 2017. We made it. I don't know what we made it to. 2017. I mean, the Earth's going to spin anyway, right? Maybe our friend Susan Gerbic has something to say about that.
Hello, everyone. This is Susan Gerbic from the GSOW Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia project. I'm here in New Zealand, and I'm here at the Queenstown Airport. We've been in Queenstown for a while already, but we came to get a snack because we're going to be starting the conference in a couple hours. And believe it or not, I am here with Richard Saunders, one of my favorite people, and I know one of your favorite people from the Skeptic Zone podcast. So I thought, hey, let's talk, Richard. What's been going on?
Hi, Susan. It's wonderful to meet you here in Queenstown, in beautiful New Zealand. And to look out the window, you'd think you're in the middle of Lord of the Rings. It sounds silly, like a cliche, but it is just unbelievably beautiful here.
So tell me a little bit about what you're going to be speaking about at the conference tomorrow.
I have a talk scheduled about strange energies and weird devices. In other words, things you can buy right now, which don't work, but are weird contraptions in their own right, some of them really, but they all are based on mythical energies. And I'm going to be talking about scalar energy, you know, things like this XYZ runs on spiritual energy or Reiki energy or what's another one I'm doing? Scalar energy. Energy drawn from the Earth's magnetic poles and all this stuff that sometimes can sound like science, but when you get down to it, it just all falls apart. But that doesn't mean people aren't making lots of money out of it.
Absolutely. It's like a whack-a-mole. Every time you turn around, there's another one that pops up. What are we going to be able to do about this? I mean, how are we going to fix this problem, Richard?
Slowly. I wish I had the magic answer for you using some strange energy. Slowly. I mean, we are in the long game. It might be a generational game. I don't know. We can't change these things overnight. We can have the victories like power balance, mm-hmm. where we do make a big difference. But the general, I think. When I say it could be a generational thing, I'm very passionate about educating the younger generation into basic science so they won't see something like a machine that runs on free energy and fall for it. They'll say, no, that's impossible. We know better than that. You lose. Don't stop selling us this stuff. I'm saddened by the number of people who, when confronted with a strange device with mystical energy claims, can't see that it's impossible because the laws of physics forbid it or whatever, or it's just silly. They don't know enough science to do that, and so they're easy prey. So I wish I had a quicker answer, but we are in this for the long game.
You know, I think about power balance and all the work that you did with power balance, and it is really pretty much gone. But they rename themselves, and they come out with just a product very similar, and just the next thing you know, you see somebody on the street peddling something very similar with a new name. And as you said, we really do have to educate people to when they start to see the same tricks, you know, the balance things and the
strength and the flexibility. All that's it's all these applied kinesiology tricks, which is another pseudoscience, of course, to applied kinesiology. It's muscle testing. You know, all the years now I've been teaching kids these tricks, and all the schools that have seen the Mr. Investigator show, I'm sure some of them would later on, at some stage, come across these and say, I know what that's a trick, I know. But I can only reach so many kids. I mean, although the video I made on the subject's probably been seen by more people, but it's hard. Okay, we're in it for the long game and the hard game.
Speaking of the hard game, I know that part of what you do with the Mystery Investigator show is you do a bed of nails trick. And I believe Maynard stands on top of you and he plays a trumpet or something. Can you tell me a little more about that?
Well, the bed of nails has been part of the show for many, many, many years, probably 10 plus years. And it's great because kids love it. Better nails, and we make the point. We teach a little bit of physics, you know.
You make the point.
I didn't know I said that. And over the years, whoever's working with me in the show will stand on my back, and they'll pretend to surf on my back, or they'll yell or jump. I don't know, whatever they do. And I was doing the show about a year ago with Maynard, and he brought his trombone. And during the show, he'd go just for fun every now and then, which was great. The kids loved it. But when it came time for him then to stand on my back when I was on the bed of nails, suddenly I heard the trombone going off. The kids went nuts. And it was a fabulous part of the show, and we kept it in.
I love it. And that's all about what it's all about, is getting to the children, because I think that's really where we have to go now. I don't know how we're going to do it, but we have to educate this generation that right now that's in elementary school, probably, if we are going to win this long game.
Yeah, I couldn't have put it better myself. It's prevention's better than cure.
Whenever you hear Neil deGrasse Tyson or Bill Nye talking about what we're going to have to do to solve these problems, they say, look at the 10-year-olds. Look at these 10, 12-year-old kids right now. That's where we need to be. That's the people we need to be educating, because those are the people who are going to be on Mars. Those are the people who are going to take the first steps on Mars. And I guess he's probably right. So we need to figure out what we're doing with our education and how we're going to motivate these kids. And I think shows like what you're doing are fabulous, because the kids go home and they say, they're able to take the critical thinking skills that you're teaching them and apply them in a broader sense.
That's the hope. I mean, I don't know how many kids will really take to heart all the lessons that we teach them, but some will.
As long as we can get somewhere in there, we have to do it. We have to keep doing it. And it's the same with the GSOW project. I mean, we're trying to rewrite Wikipedia in all languages concerning scientific skepticism, pseudoscience, and have the backs of all the people who are doing all the work out there, the scientists, the inventors, the podcasters, the, you know, all of our speakers. It's a daunting task, but we need to start somewhere. We have to keep doing it. We have to move forward. Because to stop and not do anything just because we'll never be able to accomplish this giant task is not something I want to do. And I think that it's just the wrong kind of mindset to put ourselves in. Because even a small task where you're moving forward, you're still moving forward.
Yeah, and imagine if Randy or Carl Sagan had thought when they were younger, what's the point? We'll just give up. Then my life would be completely different now. I wouldn't have entered this bizarre, crazy world of skepticism and looking at the paranormal, and who knows what I might have ended up doing or believing, you know?
You might have been one of those people we'd be fighting about right now, fighting against. You got in through UFOs?
Yeah, general, that sort of classic 1970s paranormal, UFOs, Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, yeah.
What would be the one thing that you would absolutely wish to be true?
I wish I had a better voice for radio.
No, I'm talking about a paranormal
that
thing.
That would be paranormal.
I think mine would have been Bigfoot. I really wish Bigfoot was real, because it would have the least effect on physics. You know, it's the most feasible thing that actually could be real, and less laws would have to change.
I hadn't thought about it that way. All right, okay. So if one of these things that we've been investigating over the years did turn out to be true, something, if someone could come up with a really good way for energy conversion, so there wasn't a lot of energy lost in the conversion process of energy, in other words, not quite free energy, but really efficient energy, that would revolutionize the planet, I think.
And it is possible-ish, you know.
We're working towards it, but, you know, a lot of the energy in your car or whatever is lost. It's not used. You know, it's lost in heat or noise, or it's a very cumbersome way we have developed so far. We're getting slightly better, but a lot of these inventions that we investigate claim to have 100% efficiency ratings and things. You know, impossible. You can't have that. So if somebody could invent something like that, then we could dramatically reduce pollution and all the flow-on effects.
Well, I guess we're going to have to get back to the conference. My setting on my phone is telling me that we have a conference starting in a few minutes, so I guess we better walk back, leave the airport now in our pea soup and pizza and ice cream cones and get back over to the conference. I am really looking forward to this, and I know you are as well. It's been so great seeing you here, Richard, too.
Thank you very much. And if people get bored one afternoon and they're looking for something to do, they can listen to the Skeptic Zone podcast.
Right after they listen to Skepticality.
Thanks again, Susan. So this episode, I'll be giving you a cool discussion. I recorded with someone who I've read about a few times and have enjoyed poking around her websites. It is Britt Marie Hermes. She runs the Naturopathic Diaries, a website which aims to share the hard truth about naturopathic medicine to protect patients and the public. As you can imagine, if you're one to expose the underbelly which lies underneath the world of alternative medicine, things can get interesting. So I am here today, and I believe I can get your name right off the bat. You're Britt Marie Deegan Hermes. That's a long name.
That is a long name. So you threw the maiden name in there just for fun, but well, I go by just Britt Marie Hermes now.
Well, that's how it was on a few of the places I've seen information about you. So I thought it was great to have, you know, the giant long name. And it's like, I guess like it's like a nobility name, isn't it?
It is now, I guess.
Now, you grew up in California, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and we're going to get around to like why I have you on. I think people will figure out before we get there just based on my questions. So when you're in school, you suffer from psoriasis?
That's right. So I grew up in a little suburb town just north of Los Angeles. And at about the age of 16, I developed pretty bad psoriasis all over my body. And it was the winter time, and I remember it like it was yesterday because I remember wanting to wear shorts and short sleeve shirts. And I played basketball and, you know, being in my basketball shorts and just being horribly embarrassed because I had these huge psoriasis plaques all over my body. And had I lived in a city with cold, properly cold winter weather, I maybe would not have been so embarrassed. But at the time, I remember feeling pretty horrified with the experience.
So it's more of a reason to live in cold climates, which I think you do now.
More clothes. Yeah, I live in Kiel, Germany now, so I'm cold all the time. No shorts here.
Yeah, see, that sounds like my ice. I love cold weather, and then my whole life I've ended up living in places that are hot. So, you know, I'm envious right now. Now, during high school, you tried to treat your psoriasis with some form of natural medicine?
Yeah, well, so the story, you know, I call it my psoriasis story because I've told this story many times in many different contexts. And it's sort of interesting that, you know, from my perspective, that it seems to always go back to this time in my life. And so my mom has psoriasis, and I have other family members on her side of the family with psoriasis. So I grew up knowing what this disease is and what it looks like as you get older and how difficult it can be to treat. And my mom has a particularly hard to treat case of psoriasis. And when it showed up all over my body, like I said, I was pretty horrified. And my mom sent me to her dermatologist, who, by, you know, her account, is a great doctor. But I had a terrible experience with this doc. I was really emotionally upset and wanted some, I guess I was looking for some support and wanted something more than just medical answers from my visit with him. And he was quite busy and offered me, you know, a plethora of different pharmaceutical medications, including steroids. I remembered asking him about other treatment options. In my memory, there were no other options, and he told me that I would basically just expect to be on steroid medications or some type of, you know, immune suppressant medication for the rest of my life. Especially since he knew my mom, you know, so he had a sense of what the course of this disease could look like for me because he had seen it in my family members. And this was a really disappointing experience for me. And it really set me off down this path of basically not wanting to have anything to do with conventional medicine. So, you know, if the recommendation was coming from a medical doctor, I didn't want it. And I just started to look for alternative remedies in other places. At the time, I didn't realize that this was naturopathic medicine. And I guess really it was, because the definition of naturopathic medicine is so broad that it essentially encompasses anything alternative. But I was looking at things like taking supplements and changing my diet and changing the types of lotions that I'm using and avoiding certain chemicals and, you know, all of these things that you could just kind of throw under the naturopathic treatment umbrella.
So, yeah, this is something that is a recurring theme when I have people on the show about medical issues. And I always wonder if there needs to be more of a focus on actual scientific-based doctors of teaching them how to deal with patients, because your story is not abnormal.
I agree. It seems to be a pretty common, you know, I've even called it sort of a universal experience of people who go into alternative medicine. And I think, you know, if I look back at my own class of students that I was in naturopathic school with, and I'm sure we'll get to more of that later, you know, we were all there because we started out being interested in natural medicine for our own health issue and having some grumpy doctor along the way who was going to tell us how it was, and this is the end of the story. And you know, so I'm struggling here because, you know, your question was science-based information. I don't think I needed science-based information as a teenager, at least in that initial moment. For me, I needed to feel like I was being, that my concerns and my fears and, you know, how emotional this was and scary this was, I needed to feel like that was being heard and understood by the person who, you know, I was charging with taking care of my health. I wanted to feel like the person that I was going to go into this, you know, health partnership with understood how I was feeling in that moment and what this was like for me. And, you know, to be present with me in that moment and say, okay, Britt, you know you don't want to take this medication, or maybe you're afraid of taking this medication, or maybe you're afraid of, you know, having psoriasis for the rest of your life and it getting worse and worse and worse. But let's take it one step at a time. Let's talk about, you know, what are your goals that you need right now? Okay, well, right now you want to feel like a normal teenage girl. So, you know, let's use some steroid medications and get this under control. Come back and see me. We can talk about different treatment options. I just needed to feel, I think, maybe empowered also in that moment to that I wasn't just sort of like a victim of this disease. And now I was going to have to, you know, take this treatment for the rest of my life. It was a really overwhelming and emotional moment for me.
Yeah, I think that's, like I said, it's just one of those things that I think that especially all of us on the science-based medical champion side need to really push for, not just trying to make sure that the stuff doesn't end up in stores and into people's lives instead of real medicine, but also try to get doctors to realize what we can do to get people wanting to go to a real doctor rather than, you know, somebody who's going to treat them with sting oil.
That's right. That's right. It's not really a fair representation, I think, of medical doctors for me to tell this one psoriasis story all the time, though, because I've certainly had great experiences that I, you know, conveniently ignore or have ignored.
Well, you know, and I think you are correct in that sense. However, though, it is sadly a common thing that keeps happening. I mean, I've heard the same story from people more than 30, 40, or 50 times. It's, and I think it really just comes down to, I mean, it could be just the fact that doctors are just so busy anymore or something of the sort. But I think that we could do a lot more subtle training, I would imagine, that would maybe up the chances that people would not fear going to the real doctor.
Yeah, perhaps.
Well, that, your experience though led you to away from real medicine, and ended up going to even school for pretty much the opposite.
That's right. So I began to have these experiences as a teenager that led me to believe that my, you know, healthy lifestyle choices and alternative medicine treatment practices more or less cured my psoriasis. And it's true that my psoriasis went into remission and has basically stayed in remission since I was about 21 or 22. But looking back, I can't say it's because of something that I was eating or not eating and other lifestyle stuff. So at the time I was taking a ton of cod liver oil and, strictly controlling my diet and careful about like sugar intake and wheat intake, for example. And a lot of supplements, but I was also using steroid creams when I needed to. You know, I also was living in San Diego and spent a lot of time in the sun, which was really good for my psoriasis. And I got a tonsillectomy at 21. And there's some evidence to suggest that, you know, when there is, sort of early onset psoriasis and cases of recurrent strep throat infections, which was me. I got strep throat once or twice a year. Sometimes these patients have remission of psoriasis symptoms after a tonsillectomy. So maybe that happened, or maybe it was none of it. You know, I don't know. But in my mind, I had cured myself with natural medicine. And so I started looking at basically professions where I could counsel people on how to live a healthy life, a healthy lifestyle. And so I was looking at health psychology programs, but ultimately, you know, through this grad school research, found naturopathic schools and decided to apply to a few and ended up attending naturopathic school at Bastyr University, which is in Seattle, Washington.
Yeah, it's actually a really pretty campus. My co-host, Swoopy, she's actually from the Seattle area, so I know the area that it's from, and I know why they put it there, because it makes you feel like you're in nature.
Yeah, it is a beautiful campus.
I read somewhere they required you to study homeopathy as well.
Oh yeah. I had to take a year's worth of homeopathy courses, and then I was tested on my homeopathy knowledge on the naturopathic licensing exam.
I always cock my head in a weird way sometimes with things like, you know, what is the science behind what they would teach you with that? It's like how you shake the thing 10 or 15 times to concuss it. I'm confused.
Right. So you should be. Homeopathy was not taught or discussed within a scientific framework. And so it was something that, you know, that we learned and were exposed to outside of science. And if anyone wanted to, you know, sort of tiptoe into the realm of trying to discuss homeopathy within a scientific context, that person would get shut down pretty quickly. Because in a class of almost 200 students, about 195 of them believed wholeheartedly that homeopathy was real and that it worked and that you didn't need a scientific study in order to prove its efficacy. So it didn't really facilitate those types of conversations. And inevitably, the poorly conducted studies of homeopathy would then be flaunted and brought up as proof that homeopathy does work. And then there were always these conversations about how you actually can't use the gold standard randomized controlled trial design to study things like homeopathy or natural medicine. And you're right, exactly. You know, our medicine's alternative, so our science must be as well. So it wasn't discussed in a scientific framework or a scientific context. It was just sort of understood that it was this special magical thing that deserved its own language and a free pass, basically.
That part of when people say they had to study things like homeopathy, it's always confused me because, and you just kind of alluded to it in there, is that it's almost like studying, you know, religion in a way, because, well, yeah, but you have no evidence for anything. We're just saying, this is the way it is. Take
right.
it. There's no, like,
right.
actual learning. It's just, this is the way it is. Repeat it back to me and have no evidence for it. Just, you know, this is how we do it.
Right. Well, you can sort of make up the evidence in your head. And for me, that's how it went. So when I went to Bastyr, actually, I didn't know anything about homeopathy. I had never heard of it. And so I was doing all these alternative medicine things prior to getting there, but I really actually didn't understand what naturopathy was and what it encompassed until I got to Bastyr. And that's when I started to learn about all sorts of things like energy healing and homeopathy and flower remedies, craniosacral therapy. And so I remember it was my first year at Bastyr, and I was sitting in the grass with some friends, and while I was sitting in the grass, I got bit by a spider. And the next day I had this really nasty, large, itchy red spider bite on my leg. And we were in class, histology class maybe, I think. And I went up to the teacher. It was being taught by a couple of naturopaths. And I thought, well, let me go ask my teacher what to do, because this spider bite is driving me crazy. And if my teacher's a doctor, I should take advantage of this and go,
yeah, really.
Go ask what's up. So I went up to her and I explained the bite, and I said, I'm terribly uncomfortable. I guess now thinking about it, the obvious answer would have been Benadryl, but it wasn't obvious to me. You can see how you can go down the rabbit hole really quickly. So I asked her what to do, and she was so excited because I think she recognized right away that she had a teaching moment ahead of her. And she said, well, you know what homeopathic remedy you need to take, right? And I said, no, I don't. I had never really seen homeopathic remedies. I don't think I had started a homeopathy class yet. I didn't know anything about it. And she said, ah, okay. Well, the remedy is called Apis. And this is the remedy that you take when, for like puncture wounds that get red, hot, and inflamed. And that's what you have going on. You have this big, red, hot, inflamed puncture spider bite. And so that's what you need to take. So she told me the dose I needed. She told me where to buy it, which was conveniently in the Bastyr bookstore upstairs, and how often to take it. And she said, you will need to redose yourself every 4 to 6 hours, and you'll know because it'll be itchy. And within 36 hours, the bite will be gone. I said, great. So I went and bought my $9 bottle of homeopathy pills, and I started taking them just like she told me, you know, away from food and drink and not too close to caffeine and all of these rules for how you take homeopathy.
Hold on. Not too close?
Yeah.
Are you serious? Like the distance between you and the caffeine?
Oh, sorry. Timing wise, not too close.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait a minute. This is a whole new thing. I was freaked out for a moment there. I mean,
you have to hold it at arm's length and throw it into your mouth.
Yeah. I was like, wait a minute.
And in my experience with, you know, in this moment, the homeopathic remedy worked exactly as she said it would. I felt like I needed to redose myself every 4 hours. It got itchy, but the itchiness started to resolve and the bite started to resolve. And within like 36 to 48 hours, it was totally gone. And I was like, oh, homeopathy is amazing. Homeopathy, this totally works. You know, this was, I didn't have to take any drugs, and it did just like, it happened just like she said it would. And really, I mean, she was just predicting the natural course of a spider bite.
You know, she doesn't know that, but that's what she did.
Getting better. Yeah, exactly. But this was a pretty priming moment for me, because then I went into homeopathy class thinking, okay, there may be something to this. So as the claims for what homeopathy could do got bigger and bigger and more, you know, like implausible, I was willing to at least hear it out. I was willing to at least take in the information and think about it and recall my own experiences with homeopathy and say, well, maybe it's possible. If they're saying it's possible, maybe it really happened that way. Why would they lie to me? And I wasn't quite thinking about it the right way, obviously. It's not that I don't think that these practitioners or teachers were trying to lie to me. I think that they are genuinely confused themselves and had experiences just like the experiences I had, where they are confusing natural courses of diseases improving and other things happening and attributing it to, you know, the magic of homeopathy.
Well, like you said earlier, like, well, here, this is going to happen after a certain amount of time. I'm sure they probably don't realize that that's the amount of time it takes for it to go away anyway.
Right. Yeah.
So it's one of those things. I think Ben Goldacre did a talk about something similar I've seen him do. And he said the same thing about the same thing where people give placebos to people and they don't even know if the sometimes the placebo effect is attributed to something that would have happened anyway. And it's the same idea, is that, you know, well, yeah, and like in 2 days, the itchy's going to slow down. And you know, but most people will go, okay, that pill was magic. It worked. It's real medicine. So, and you know, people listening to this might not realize, but Bastyr as a school is not like a normal college. It's a special focused institution, kind of like, so it's not like a real college. It's kind of like ITT Tech, which doesn't exist anymore, but that type of thing, right?
It's exactly like ITT Tech. So this was a... Let me sort of provide some background and then tell the story about this, if you don't mind, because this really got me upset. So for listeners of yours that don't know, The quick end to this story is that I eventually ended up leaving my practice as a naturopath, and then I went on to start writing about some of the problems with naturopathic education and clinical training, and then problems within the profession. And one of the things that I started to come across right away was how naturopathic students and licensed naturopaths who graduated from these accredited schools like Bastyr would use the education terminology to suggest that the naturopathic training system was better than it was. And so specifically, they would say things like, I attended a 4-year accredited naturopathic medical school. This is the common phrase that you're going to hear or see written all over naturopathic websites. This is the phrase that I would write to describe my own training. And when someone would say, what do you do? I would say, oh, I'm a licensed primary care physician, which was true. I was allowed to call myself a primary care physician. And then when they asked where I went to school, I would say, I went to a 4-year accredited naturopathic medical school. So I would use as much of the regular conventional medical language to justify what I was doing as much as possible. And what accreditation means is that the school passes benchmarks for being organized and having a mission statement and having certain you know, administrative things in place so that it runs smoothly and, you know, there's a code of ethics and this type of thing. Accreditation does not mean that the quality of the educational curriculum taught at that institution has been approved or checked off by anyone. And so just because it's accredited doesn't mean that it's a high-quality education. It doesn't mean that the content taught in those classes is real or valid or on par with that, with the same type of information that's taught in a real medical school. But anyone who goes to an accredited naturopathic school will like you to believe that that is what it means. So when I lobbied for naturopathic licensing as a student at Bastyr, which is something naturopaths do on an annual basis, we will go to Washington, D.C., and I went to Washington, D.C. with a group of naturopathic students and licensed naturopaths to lobby to the federal government to be able to call ourselves primary care physicians, to get access to student loan repayment programs, to be included in programs like Medicare and Medicaid. You know, we lobby for all sorts of things. And when we go there, we use this accreditation language to try to convince lawmakers that we are real healthcare practitioners. And on these lobby documents that I helped pass out to lawmakers and their aides, we described our education as being classified the same way as medical schools and other degrees that offer what's called like a first professional degree. So certain graduate schools like medical school, I believe pharmacy school, I think law school, they all get classified under this special degree category called a first professional degree. And this means something very, very important and it carries a lot of weight. But in reality, like you just mentioned, Bastyr is actually accredited as a special focus institution. So this is how acupuncture schools are classified. This is how, like ITT Technical School, like you said, is classified. This is how a lot of the sort of non-degree granting programs and definitely less rigorous programs are classified. So there was a total blatant like misuse of terminology, and in my opinion, and it seemed intentional because this information was coming directly from the naturopathic professional organization and being handed to lawmakers. But that's quite an allegation. So I just say I handed out information provided to me by the profession that had blatantly wrong information on it to mislead people into what type of education I had received as a naturopath.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, the same thing as bottled water saying, you know, it's natural spring water. Well, technically, yeah, but that doesn't mean it wasn't, you know, produced or filtered and treated, because otherwise you didn't want to drink deer poop.
Well, I think it's even a bit worse than that. I think it's like handing out bottled water and saying it's white wine.
Well, okay.
You know, because as naturopaths, we were saying, you know, I was part of a group of students that were saying, I attended a school that's on par with medical school. And that is absolutely false. There, in no way is that statement accurate.
Well, and you should know, because actually you're in kind of, it's not really medical school, but science based schooling now.
That's right. So I'm completing a Master's of Science. The program specializes in translational medical research. So I've had to take, and the program takes place at the university teaching clinic, and it is part of the medical school at the University of Kiel. And so many of my teachers are medical doctors themselves. And so I've had to learn a lot of medical information, and I've had to retake all of these basic medical science courses that I had to take at Bastyr, because what I was taught at Bastyr was nowhere near the level of graduate school that, you know, that is required in order to go on and to do science in these fields.
And now you actually know both sides, because you can actually speak to it. You know, in reality, you can say, well, this is not even close to the same.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a real eye-opening experience.
You know, it's funny because you kind of got out of your doing your naturopathic treatments after working with somebody. You watched them do something fairly unethical. Is that what got you out of it? And you can probably tell people a little bit about that.
Yeah, definitely. So I graduated from Best Deer. I did a 1-year residency in Seattle in family practice, and then I moved to Tucson, Arizona, and I got a job pretty quickly at a naturopathic clinic in Tucson that employed a couple of naturopaths, an acupuncturist, a massage therapist, a chiropractor, and so it was called an integrative clinic. And the naturopath who runs the clinic still specialized in providing natural and alternative cancer treatments to patients. And while I was building up my practice, he offered to let me shadow him and sort of be trained in these natural cancer therapies that he provides to patients. And I thought that this was a great idea. I was really excited for the opportunity because this naturopath, his name is Michael Yuzik, has a reputation in the naturopathic community for being a really good cancer naturopath, and he's considered to be one of the best. So I thought, I'll definitely do this. And then now I'll have one more tool in my toolkit, so to speak. And what happened was he started importing a medication from Austria. The medication's called Ukraine. And Ukraine is an interesting chemotherapy drug, basically. It's made in part from a plant called chelidonium, but it does contain some known chemotherapeutic alkaloids. So in this case, it has a real anti-cancer effect. But the pharmaceutical company had been shut down, and the manufacturer and owner of the company was investigated for charges of fraud related to relabeling and continuing to sell expired product. And there were serious concerns and accusations about quality assurance, basically. And since this has happened, the manufacturer of the drug was found guilty and is currently serving jail time. So this medication was arriving overseas. Patients were paying cash for it. There was some system of money wiring going on in order to get the money to Austria and then for the product to get here. And basically, we were waiting for our next shipment of drug to arrive, and it didn't come. And there was a small conversation between my boss and I about what could possibly be going on. And Yuzik mentioned that the drug might have been confiscated, which piqued my interest. So I started Googling the name of the drug and, you know, what it would mean if the FDA confiscated it, and quickly learned that Ukraine is not approved by the FDA to be used in the treatment of cancer or any disease. And then realized quickly that that meant that the importation and administration of this drug was a federal crime. And so I found myself in the midst of a very serious problem. I had assisted Yuzik in giving this drug to patients, and under his orders, I had also administered the drug to patients. So I also felt like I carried some personal responsibility, and that, of course, encouraged me to take the action which I did, which was to seek legal counsel and quit the practice, report Yuzik to the regulatory board and to the state attorney general's office. And then I started to do some deep soul searching about what had happened. I spoke to a longtime mentor of mine who had been a member or is a member of the naturopathic community, is a well-respected doctor, has been a naturopath for decades, I think more than 30 years. And his advice to me was to let it go, that it wasn't that big of a deal that this drug was being imported and used. And the response that I felt like I was getting from the naturopathic community, from those who I was disclosing this information to, was sort of along those lines. Like, this wasn't that big of a deal, Britt, and that I was overreacting. And that really stuck with me and made me take a hard look at what naturopaths were doing around North America. How were they conducting their business? What were they advertising? Were they also sort of blatantly crossing the ethical and legal line by importing medications or saying, you know, there's more evidence for a treatment than there really is? And I just began to find example after example of what I considered to be just unethical and unprofessional practices. And since I wasn't practicing anyway at this point, I was in a position where I could really sit and think about if I wanted to be a part of this community. And I decided ultimately that I couldn't ethically be a naturopath. I couldn't professionally hang out with other naturopaths and be okay with what the community was doing, with what the profession was allowing, with the seemingly lack of regulations, and with what appeared to be, in my opinion, a desire for the profession to profit and to make political advances, for these goals to be placed over patient safety.
Yeah, well, and you started a change.org petition to try to make this more visible to the public.
That's right. So I started, as you said, a change.org petition to stop the licensing of naturopaths who attend these accredited schools and to stop allowing naturopaths to call themselves doctors and physicians, because I think this terminology is very misleading for patients. Naturopaths do not attend medical school. They're not trained to treat medical diseases or to know how to act in case of a medical emergency. And I think it's very dangerous for naturopaths to be licensed as medical practitioners.
Yeah, and I noticed from my research that it angered, go figure, the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians, which actually stole their acronym from a real medical group that my roommate / co-host Swoopy actually belongs to, because she's a nurse. And the same exact acronym is the American Academy of Nurse Practitioners. So she was upset about that, too.
Yeah. Well, perhaps this is just another example of naturopaths hijacking medical terms and redefining them for their own purpose.
Yeah, because the AAMP is highly respected in the medical world. Because, it's almost like as if they kind of knew that going in.
Perhaps.
Now they've been trying to rally against you the same way you are online and such. And well, how is your change.org petition going?
It's going well. So there's been a strong favorable response. I am waiting to hit 10,000 petition signers. We're almost there, and this information will be presented the next legislative season, so I'm hoping to be able to play a strong legislative role this next year. And it's not just for the U.S., it's also Canada, because Canada has had a really interesting year with the regulation of naturopaths. And there's been some pretty serious examples of patients and children getting harmed in Canada. So I think collectively, you know, across North America, there's going to be a big change and a big movement and a big push for demanding science-based and evidence-based medicine. So I'm feeling pretty optimistic and pretty hopeful about the outlook of all of this.
I am too. However, as of like a day or two ago, now Andrew Wakefield of, you know, anti-vaccine claim fame, the guy who actually has been, you know, found guilty for doing terrible things, he and his group met with Trump.
Of course they did.
Yeah. because he had a meeting with them during his campaign trail, and you know, and they came out of their meeting with their hopes raised. So
hopefully
we have to, like, you know, keep an eye on this thing and put some pressure on lawmakers, especially now.
Right. Well, I didn't know that, but I'm not surprised, because Trump has said some anti-vax things in the past, and he's made the inaccurate link between autism and vaccinations.
And
he seems to just be a magnet for all things nonsensical. But I think, and if anyone is listening that has any ideas or wants to join me, I think the way to go from here on out is to start moving from playing defense to playing offense. And so it seems to me that we're always going to be playing a game of whack-a-mole, you know, of the different pseudoscience of the moment, whether it's, you know, touting anti-vax beliefs or some crazy medical treatment or whatever. You're always going to find example after example of having to defend legislation, you know, having to make sure that crappy legislation basically doesn't get pushed through, that doesn't legitimize pseudoscience or fake health practitioners. But I would like to try to turn the tables and to start to introduce legislation that places restrictions on how medical terminology is used, who can use the word doctor, for example, who can use the word physician, age restrictions for natural health practitioners and their patients, so not being able to treat patients under the age of 18, for example, not allowing alternative health practitioners into places like the VA, for example, and just creating like a really tight restrictions on what the alternative practitioners are legally allowed to do before they continue to make more legislative headway.
Yeah, trust me, I'm all about that too. So hopefully things like what you're doing will further this, you know, goal. And I think there's a lot of other people that are on board with this as well. It's just hopefully we won't need to be as terrible. Hopefully things won't be as bad as they seem they might be.
Right.
So I will let people know where they can find out more about you, because you have a blog, The Naturopathic Diaries.
That's right. So I blog semi-consistently these days at naturopathicdiaries.com. So I'm in the midst of completing my master's thesis, and it's the holiday season. So readers, please be patient with me. Thank you for your patience with me. I'm working to get blog posts out every couple weeks, but sometimes I fall behind.
And your blog actually won the Occam Award this year.
That's right.
Very cool. Well, I'll have links to all the stuff that we talked about, especially the change.org petition, so that hopefully we can get some more signers on that. And let's see if we can at least make something, you know, good happen.
I think we can. There's enough of us. We just, and the organization, the Society for Science-Based Medicine, is a great organization to look at for legislative updates and for knowing what's going on in your state, in your hometown. And it's just about being vocal. So the naturopathic community consists of a very small but very loud group of passionate individuals, and we outnumber them for sure. We just have to make our voices heard, and I think we can do it if we get together and try to make something happen.
It's funny you say that, because that's so true. If you look at things like most of these, like anti-science groups, or especially some of the wild, off the charts, crazy religious groups, if you actually look at their numbers, they're so small. It's just the noise that some of those groups make. And then I don't know, some of the science-based community, we're so right half the time. I think we get complacent with the fact that, well, you know, we don't need, and I work with scientists, and I've talked to them, and it took me a while to get one of my coworkers to come on the show, because, like, they just didn't seem to understand why they had to talk about the science part. It's like, this makes sense. What do you mean? No, nobody believes that, do they? It's like, oh, they do. And it's funny how even the science-based people, the people who work in science, a lot of them don't even realize how many people believe wacky things. And when they hear it, they think it's like lawn chair conspiracy theory people that must be a handful of folks. But they don't realize right. how loud they are and how much influence they actually have. So, and that's a big problem. And I think that's one of the things you're trying to push it against yourself. So
definitely. I would love the voices of scientists to drown out the opinions and the voices of celebrities. Yeah. That would be an awesome success. And unfortunately, celebrities tend to have more power. You know, their voices tend to get heard above others. And if they're promoting something that isn't science-based or dangerous, people are going to latch on to that. So, but we can do it. We're smart. We're organized. We're passionate. And I think I am feeling optimistic. So don't feel pessimistic. We can do it. Okay. We can make change.
Well, I've been doing this show for over 10 years, so I haven't been beaten down yet.
Good.
Very cool. So I will, like I said, I'll have the links to your blog, your some of the things we talked about here, and some of your articles I think you've been mentioned in, and also a couple of them you've written.
Sounds good.
And your link to your change.org petition, and let's see if we can make things happen.
Very good. Awesome.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for taking your time.
Thank you. It was fun.
Thanks again to Britt for allowing me to take a bit of her time. Remember, you can find out more about Britt and everything else you heard by checking out the website for this show. It's over at www.skepticality.com. People freak out now because now we're talking about somebody went to okay now she's right outside my window. And the dogs hate it too, so now they're barking.
Yeah, are those your dogs or someone else's?
Yeah, it's my dogs. It's a couple of French bulldogs.
Mm-hmm.
And they're out there hopping around barking at the leaf blower. Well, I have one who doesn't care what goes on in the world. She just stands there and watches everything, doesn't care. And then we have one that gets excited about everything.
Mm-hmm.
She just freaks out at, like, anything, especially cats. Oh, geez. If there's a cat, it's like, oh, what is that? Why is it here? Does it exist? Why does it exist? It must be a demonic thing.
Attack.
Yes. No, she doesn't actually, it's weird though. She doesn't attack. She just freaks out and runs around. She's just, French bulldogs are weird. It's funny.
Yeah.
They're small and fun.
I know. Yeah. We're equally obsessed with our dog on this side.
Uh-huh. Wait, what kind of dog did you get?
A Shar Pei.
Oh, okay. Yeah, one of my good friends actually lives not that far from me. He has a Shar Pei.
They're funny dogs.
Yeah. Yeah, like the French bulldogs, I'm sure you have, you know, talk about psoriasis. Dogs that have wrinkles. Oh boy.
I know, it's true. Actually, while I was in naturopathic school, and then even when I practiced as a naturopath, I subjected my poor dog to all sorts of naturopathic and alternative medicine treatments.
Oh no.
I know, it's really terrible, and he was constantly not feeling well.
I mean, he can't talk, so he doesn't.
And I was like, oh, he doesn't feel well. He must need more alternative medicine.
Well,
poor thing.
Yeah.
As soon as I stopped, magically, everything got better.
That's the real magic. You use the magic so that the magic, so taking it away becomes the magic.
Yeah.